Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Oh, hello, welcome to another episode of Tech Talk, and today we're getting all, well, technical. Yes, I know that might sound obvious, but not on this programme. Robin Christofferson's with me. Hello, Robin.
Yep, certainly nothing to do with me.
No, well, we are getting technical this week. We're going to be talking about CodeJumper, which sounds completely bizarre to me as a concept, as an idea, but thankfully we have got someone with brains who is going to be joining us to discuss this. Thank goodness. David Woodbridge from Vision Australia is here. He is going to be joining us shortly. We're going to be hearing from him about CodeJumper, what it means as it launches in Australia. Of course, it most recently launched here in the UK with RNIB. We'll hear more about all of that. And by popular demand, Robin, on this week's show, I finally talk about using the keyboard, as in the standard QWERTY keyboard, a physical keyboard, with your iPhone.
Good.
I know.
I'm going to learn something.
Well, I'm hoping you'll learn something. Although in saying that, we've kind of been learning this together, haven't we? We've been using this for a while. In fact, we both have exactly the same keyboard. We're like keyboard buddies.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to be talking about...
Keyboard buddies as well.
Absolutely. Proper buddies, but also keyboard buddies. More importantly, possibly, for this feature anyway. So, yeah, between us, we're going to be kind of talking this through. And I'll be explaining to you how I use my keyboard with the iPhone, not the iPad though, and a lot of people use the keyboard with the iPad. I'm going to be honest, Robin, I prefer using it with the iPhone. Mm-hmm. Just me. So we'll get into that. We'll also find out what David Woodbridge thinks about all that as well. So that's all coming up on the show this week. But yeah, let's start off by talking about CodeJumper, shall we? Because it's a new initiative to help kids learn to code. I'm kind of annoyed about this. I'm going to be honest, Robin. I'm kind of annoyed about this because it's not... I want to learn how to code. Why is it always the kids that get the fun in life?
Kids of all ages.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm a kid at heart. There, we'll put it that way. And I would quite like to learn how to code because I do not understand this world at all. And that is exactly why this has been developed. It was done in partnership with Microsoft and the American Printing House for the Blind. It's been launched in various countries, including the UK. Our very own Baz Loxtaby went along to the launch in London of CodeJumper with RNIB.
An educational tool to help primary school children with vision impairment learn how to code has been launched onto the UK market by the RNIB. The award-winning tool called CodeJumper is the first of its kind. It was designed by Microsoft and developed by American Printing House for the Blind as a tactile teaching aid that is fully accessible for all children, including those with visual impairments. I went to the launch of CodeJumper, which was held in central London on the 17th of January, to find out more. I spoke to Cecily Morrison, who is one of the people who came up with the idea, which is now known as CodeJumper.
CodeJumper is a physical programming language for teaching programming concepts and computational thinking, children ages 7 to 11, regardless of their level of vision. So it works by having a set of pods, which are something that fit in your hand. You plug them together with audio jacks, and by plugging these together, you create commands in your program, which you can then run, and it plays sound, stories, jokes, anything that you can listen to.
Nick Adamson was invited by the RNIB to speak at the event as he is a blind parent who is a senior software engineer working for a major defence company.
Coding itself isn't visual. If you imagine code, it's your standard alphabets with punctuation marks, formatted in a particular way, just in a text file, something screen readers and braille displays handle really, really well. So actually writing computer code is something that can come really naturally to someone who can't see the screen. And even when you're writing, you know, screens and setting out how things look on screen, even that's just maths, you know, move this box 7 pixels this way and that sort of thing. It's a very text-based world.
After speaking to Cecily and Nick, I figured it would be good to speak to somebody who could benefit from the technology. So I spoke to Kira and Dan, two students from New College Worcester, a school for blind and partially sighted pupils, to see what they thought and if they were interested.
I love CodeJumper. I'm really excited for this. And I love CodeJumper because it takes something potentially scary to some people, a programming language, and puts it in a very easy, fun, and accessible format.
Yeah, Dan about covers it. It's great because it's accessible, and for someone like me who is absolutely atrocious with tech, it makes it very easy and I can't really break anything, so it's brilliant.
I like that. Well, I must say I'm absolutely atrocious when it comes to maths, so I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing for me to get into coding. But Robin, it is interesting to see it launch into the UK, and David Woodbridge is also joining us from Vision Australia, where it has just launched there. Hi to you, David.
Hey, yeah, I was a bit scary when you said you've got some of your brains to come on the programme and talk about it. I thought, oh, God, maybe he's talking about Robin again.
No, well, what happened was we'd written that into the script. We hadn't added the name yet, but, you know, we just added your name in last minute. So you kind of got an added-on compliment there. No, listen, seriously, we are so glad to have you here because you do know about this. I think you're probably out of the three of us the most intrigued in coding and teaching, or at least teaching that this exists and that kids can code. I want to get into the weeds a little bit on this, but I am conscious that perhaps a lot of our audience will not be aware of this, will not have coded before. Mm. I mean, it is for kids. Could anybody use it?
Yes, they can, yeah. Can I just say up to front that this is the first accessible coding example. It's not the first accessible system that's been around, because remember, we've always had Swift Playgrounds, Swift VoiceOver on the iPad in particular since about September 2016. So this is the first physical accessibility type thing. It's not the first accessible solution, though, to learn coding.
Oh, that's interesting. Right, okay. I mean, and it's interesting, Nick Adamson said there, coding is actually really simple because it's all text-based. So actually, if you understand the basics of it, I guess once you've got into it, coding is fairly simple. I mean, is that fair?
Yeah, it is fair from a block coding point of view. So what CodeJumper does, when sighted children learn coding at school, they have these things called block coding apps, which are not accessible if you're blind in particular. And what they do, they take a chunk of text and put it in a sequence. So let's say, for example, you want the robot, for example, the little toy robot on the screen, to move three steps forward, once to the right, and wave. Then you think, okay, so the first chunk of text I want is move forward. So you copy and paste that into the little box, and the little robot gets all excited and jumps up and down. Then you take the second block of text and you put it next to the second one and third one and so on. And then if you get it right, so you've got move forward, move forward, move forward, turn left, wave, then you've done your actual whole program. So each movement command is a line of text. So how that transfers over to CodeJumper is CodeJumper is made up of these little pods, and they're about the size of a computer mouse. And the basic ones that you mainly play with are called play pods, and they've got like a speed dial on them to make the sound play louder faster or slower. And then another selection sound button to select different sounds like a racing horse, a galloping horse, a yee-haw, and that sort of stuff for cowboys. Mm. So what you would do, let's say, for example, you chose, and I'll get over this in a minute, but you can choose themes. So there's a Twinkle Twinkle Little Star theme, the cowboy theme, and so on. So let's say you chose Twinkle Twinkle, and we all know Twinkle Twinkle goes Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. So you get your first play pod out, you plug it into the hub, which makes the whole thing talk, and you hear a click, so you know that the pod's being connected, and then you turn your sound dial and you hear twinkle, 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 star. So the first question is, well, okay, so for the first line of code, what's the first line? Is it star? Is it little? Is it twinkle? So you think, okay, well, it's the twinkle, and then you do your second line of code, which is you get another pod, plug it into the second pod. You hear another click sound and you go, okay, so we've got twinkle first. What's the second command or the second line in our code?
Twinkle.
And of course, it's twinkle again. Yeah, and you keep going.
Right. I'm getting into this.
You know, well done, Stephen. You've just graduated basic level coding level one.
Right.
So that's how complicated it gets. But where it comes interesting is when you've then got to do a loop. So, you know, program-wise, the command is, you know, if one is greater than blah, 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 then go and do something else. And that gets a little bit complicated. Whereas with a loop pod, what I can do is I plug the loop pod directly into the hub, and then I've got a cable that comes out the bottom. I plug a play pod into that one, and then I plug the other end of the play pod back into the loop pod at the other end of it. So I've formed a nice loop. And then I've got this little round dial that I'd say, okay, I want this, when I run this code, I want the dog to bark from 1 to 8 times. And that's a loop. Right. But you're trying to explain that from a, you're trying to explain that in a text-based edit field, which is, you know, I think it's off the top of my head, I think it's something like if im space 1.8 is less than or greater equal to blah blah blah. Whereas you say you fill this loop. So we've got one cable going to the hub, and then we've got a cable coming around and going into the play pod on one end. And we've got another cable coming out the other end of the play pod going back into the actual loop pod itself. And then the rest of the code then comes out of that to a second or third play pod. Physically speaking, that's very easy to feel tactile and get the idea of what we're talking about when we talk about looping.
Yeah, I mean, this is aimed at teaching the principles of you know, the basic ideas of if-thens, loops, sequences, and you then would use those, you know, those concepts to be able to better understand it when you start switching to the text-based programming.
That's a bit that threw me, I think, because I was thinking, right, how do you get from one to the other? But essentially what you're teaching here is the theory behind coding. Mm-hmm. So that's the purpose, really, is it?
That's right.
But you actually get to run a
program, you're teaching the concepts.
Cool.
That's right, exactly. So the whole Twinkle Twinkle Star is, the program. And by the way, Robin, that's my Alexa just going off, reminding me it's getting time for you to go to bed for the boys here in Australia. So there you go. Little plug for your dot-to-dot program while we're on live. how's that for circumstantial?
Yeah, where's the tech talk one? We'll just skip past that one.
There you go. But getting back to CodeJumper, but the other nice thing about it is that what you then do with the children is you say, okay, I'm actually going to muck up all your code. I'm going to put things back to front and inside out and upside down, like the play pods in the wrong order. Now I want you to troubleshoot the code. So every time you plug in a play pod, coding always says to you, test your code one line at a time. So you press the play button on the hub, it says star, and you think, oh, well, that wrong. So you test, so each time you put a new play pod in or a new loop pod in, you keep testing code one line at a time. Now, the other really cool thing about CodeJumper is that you don't actually have to use the PC, because once it's set up with the CodeJumper app running on the Windows 10 machine, you can completely use the hub to play all the lines of code, i.e. each pod, play the whole code at once, and stop and start it wherever you feel like it. It's only then after you get used to that physical play that you send it out, and then you say to the kids, hey, by the way, this program is actually running on a computer screen that your support teacher or the teacher is looking at, or the other low vision or sight children are looking at. Let's take our screen reader or screen magnifier and let's look at each code on the screen. And you can actually see then how the words are equal to the sounds that are being played in the playbook. And that's when you start to introduce that digital concept of programming in words on the computer screen.
I think it's really good. And is this affordable? Is this something that a school would buy?
This is something that a school would buy. This is not something that an individual would buy. So I know Stephen always makes fun of the prices in Australia. So I don't know how much it's in the UK, but it's actually $1,750 here in Australia per unit.
Wow. Yeah, so this is for a school, isn't it? That's purely what this is for.
That's right. And look, you know, APH, American Printing House for the Blind, says it's from, you know, I think they said it was from 7 to 11 years old, 11-year-olds. I think it's part of a whole process of teaching children coding, because what they're teaching, which is the physical concept, problem solving, sequencing, troubleshooting, being very patient, not getting frustrated, that's what it's teaching. When you're moving on to other things like the Ballyland Code 1, 2 and 3 apps on your iPhone or your iPad, or you're looking at 3D models to, you know, play on a grid, or eventually looking at Swift playgrounds and looking at controlling robots and drones, that's the whole coding kit that I can actually see going from something very basic like CodeJumper, then perhaps moving on to 3D figures, the Ballyland basic apps, and then Swift playgrounds. So for me, it's a it's a whole sequence of things. You can't just rely on CodeJumper itself to, you know, teach you coding. It's only the concepts of coding that it's teaching. But it's, you know, from a sequencing and problem solving and sort of STEM type of thing, it's still really fantastic.
Just to widen this out a bit, because, you know, again, the subject of coding is one which I think for a lot of school kids now is going to be a really important one. And I was watching an article on a BBC show over here called Click, and they were talking about the Raspberry Pi. And they were saying how a lot of people love using the Raspberry Pi because they like the manipulation factor. They can get into things, try things. And there was a kind of a phrase I'd never heard before, which was program or be programmed. And that's how the future will be, which is that we'll choose to go with the flow, get what we are given, or manipulate that app or code or whatever to suit ourselves. And that seems to be where this could be useful. So there's the hobby aspect to it, but of course there's a career aspect as well. How important is that for kids to learn, in particular, of course, blind and partially sighted kids?
Oh, I think it's amazingly important because, you know, there's no reason why a person who's blind or low vision can't be a computer programmer. Because it's just, I mean, like when I know I don't just say it's just code, but it's coding. I mean, anybody can code. And at the end of the day, you can always find computer designers and graphic designers to tidy up the screen. But if you write the underlying code for a program, then that's your program. Then it's very powerful. So you could have a career in coding.
I would argue that it's never been a better time for a blind person to go into coding. You know, iOS would be the obvious target to code for, to develop on. That's the platform to look at. That's where it's all happening. And you can use Xcode. That's the kind of grown-up parent of Swift Playgrounds on the Mac. You have to develop for iOS on using a Mac, guys. It's totally accessible. You could use Swift as a really good emerging language, and Swift UI, which is their way of really simply building visual interfaces. They spoke on that package earlier about how creating the visual side of a program is actually all about text as well. And that's never been more true than with Swift UI. So yeah, I think it's a really good time. If you're wondering what to do, then, you know, consider, although I must say, I've been listening to a podcast series called Programming by Stealth, and programming isn't easy. It really isn't. I used to have a stress ball in the shape of a brain, and just imagine grabbing that and kind of twisting it at each end. That's what it feels like trying to follow this. But yeah, I mean, people with brains than me get to grips with it. So yeah.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm happy to be the be programmed kind of guy. I'll just take what I'm getting. But, you know, I think this is really important for people. And like I say as well, I think for not older people, but not kids, essentially, I think it's important, David, that we all get this chance to use this. You know, I often hear this. You know, I don't have kids, right? So I'm one of these people. I don't have kids, so I don't bother with them. And it's a case of, right, okay, fine. You've all got everything. That's great. What am I getting out of it? And I wonder if there's an opportunity here for people later in life to actually get into this as well. Because let's be honest, you know, jobs are going to disappear as a result of automation. And my joke is always, well, you know, in a world full of robots, the job that needs to be is how to fix the robots.
It's interesting though too, because when you think of programming, don't stop thinking about programming as just, you know, controlling devices or programming something. Programming is also things like JAWS scripting, Supernova, you know, Dolphin scripting.
Yeah.
It's Apple scripting. So if you can write clever scripts, and I believe there's an application written in the UK called Lisa that actually runs off JAWS.
Lisa, yes, that's right.
That's a script. Lisa, is it? Yeah, so that's a script, so as far as I understand it. So, you know, that's the power of a script language. So, you know, just don't think about computer programming. Think about all the things that you could write that are script-based, which are languages. So, you know, I'd love to be able to write more advanced Apple scripts on my Mac to do all clever sorts of things. I'd love to do more JAWS scripting. So it just doesn't stop at, you know, traditional computer programming. It's all that other stuff that goes alongside it.
Well, I'm deliberately wanting to encourage more young people to do it so I can throw money at them and say, you do it. That would be good for me. I'm very lazy, David. That's how it works for me. So on the CodeJumper front, if you want to get it from the RNIB, you can find it on our website, rnib.org.uk. Search for the shop or just go to shop.rnib.org.uk, actually. You'll find it there, a CodeJumper. It is coming in at £1,074 in British money. That equates to, I think it's £895 ex-VAT, which, of course, you don't pay the VAT if you're blind or partially sighted, but it's still a considered purchase, isn't it? I mean, you're not going to, you know, that's a Christmas present, possibly, by a really, you know, friendly mum and dad. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a lot of money. And Leasy as well is well worth checking out, actually, for a whole host of different things. L-E-A-S-E-Y. You get that from Brian Hartgen at Hartgen Consultancy. So definitely worth bringing that up. I'm really glad you came on, David, this week because, you know, it is a subject that, you know, a lot of our audience, including me, don't really know a heck of a lot about and, you know, wouldn't even know where to start. You know, from your point of view, you've been sort of dabbling in this world. What is a good way to just start? Even, you know, if you're not going to buy the CodeJumper, fine, fair enough. But you mentioned Swift on the Mac side, mm-hmm. and particularly on the iPad. Is there like an app you can just go and try stuff?
There certainly is. Yep, Swift Playgrounds is absolutely free. So you can just get it on the Mac. You can download it from the Mac App Store and use it free to fly your drone into your head when you're practicing. Or if you happen to have an iPad, which I know, Stephen, you're now getting all grumpy about because you're losing your vision and you think your iPad's no longer good for you.
No, I don't like it.
But I'll get to a note in your use of your keyboard in a minute with the iPad, which the iPhone can't do. But yeah, so if you've got an iPad, you can get the Swift Playgrounds for free and you can get the Mac app for free. And they're both exactly the same for accessibility. Of course, they also work for Braille display. So if you want to dabble in Swift Playgrounds, in the coding, get Swift Playgrounds and load in the Learning to Code 1 or Learning to Code 2 and start programming.
That is pretty amazing when you think about it. It's all in there and it's free. That is wonderful. So, yeah, do check that out. Look, I am going to be talking about using the keyboard with the iPhone later. I want you to weigh in on this before you go. I'm a big fan of using it with the iPhone, and I use my Braille display with my iPhone as well. I haven't bothered so much with the iPad. Am I the only person in the world who thinks that the iPad experience with a keyboard is, in fact, the iPad itself, I mean, I know it is a slightly different layout, but using a keyboard with the iPad is just a little bit more challenging. Am I the only one that thinks that?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, right.
I kind of know what you mean because there's more on each screen. There's more on each screen. So there's more to have to jump around in and, you know, you've got the different containers and stuff. So I get what you mean, but if you're doing a mixture of roaming, so you can just tap somewhere on the, you know, towards the top of the right-hand side, for example, to be able to get to, I don't know, the body of an email, rather than just doing VO space on the email itself on your iPhone, and then you're instantly in the body. So it's kind of 6 2/3, but at the same time, I must admit that I kind of feel a bit more at sea with the bigger screen, whether it's just using it by touch or driving it from the
keyboard. We're probably not power users. You're just pedals, you two.
Yeah. We're snowflakes.
Jeez Louise. You're little snowflakes. I was going to say I'll give you a cuddle, but I can't now because of the virus stuff. So no cuddles.
Please don't. No, please don't. But no, honestly, I mean, I feel that I'm with you, Robert. I'm at sea because I think it's more easy to get lost on an iPad than it is on an iPhone, for sure, because I think the way I envisage it in my head is I'm going through a big list on a phone, whereas, and it is the same on an iPad, of course it is, you could, and I think it's maybe the way I use it as well, because I tend to use everything with QuickNav, which Robin I know hates.
Can I give you a few counter-arguments?
Go on then.
Right. Okay, so if you go into settings, for example, on an iPad, down the left-hand side, you've got the categories of Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, general accessibility. And then when you tap on one of those, the right-hand side panel comes up with those settings. So, you know, you don't have to move anywhere. You just tap on the thing on the left-hand side and it comes up on the right-hand side. The same with mail. You've got your list of messages, at least on my one, when I'm in landscape mode, I've got the list of messages on the left-hand side. If I tap on an email, I know I can just go to the right-hand side, either with a voiceover command on the keyboard or just touch on the screen like Robin said. And I've got the email straight there.
So what command do you...
I can just jump between two apps.
What keyboard command are you using to do that leap? Because that's the bit I always get stuck on.
I think off the top of my head, I think it's VO left bracket and VO right bracket.
Oh, really?
Is that to switch containers?
No, that's the switch. That's the switch focus on the screen. It might be the containers.
Because that's the bit I've always been stuck on.
I think we just don't know it well enough, Steve.
Yeah,
just,
I think you're right.
We're not good enough.
No, well, I know that.
Mind you, I just could have made total bonks of that, and actually just got the command wrong. But the other thing you can do on the iPad, which you cannot do on the iPhone, is on Windows terms, it's Alt Tab, but on a Mac, it's Command Tab. So you can Command Tab between applications on an iPad. Yes. You can't do that on an iPhone.
I do like that feature. I must say that is a brilliant feature.
Although I would say, and the other thing, it's not the keyboard, but you can use a four-finger swipe left and right to do the same thing on the
You just want to use your touchscreen, don't you?
Well, this is but actually, do you know what?
Use a real keyboard.
Yeah, this is my thing, right? I'm with you on this one, David. I want to use the keyboard alone, and that's the problem actually for me. I think because I don't want to touch the touchscreen if I can avoid it at all. I'm actually finding I'm doing a lot more with the Braille display than the QWERTY, which is interesting. Just because of the fact there are so many commands and I can, change and chop and change as much as I want in that. And I know I could probably do the same in keyboard commands as well, but I am enjoying using the Braille display. But for people who've been asking, and I know lots of people have been asking on the show, how do I do this? There's just nothing really out there. I've done the review.
This is the power of VoiceOver too, because I'm still pretty sure this is the case, Robert, is on Android, or maybe Steve, you will know this, you don't really have the full navigation capability of TalkBack. It's more the Android that's navigating you around with basically simple keyboard, whereas VoiceOver's got the full screen reader functionality going on as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And one thing that I always use when I'm using my iPad is the find command all the time. So I can't be bothered VO right arrowing or quick navigating around to find the control. If I know what the control is, I just do VO F for find, type in the label, hit enter, and Bob's your uncle, I'm straight there under the label.
Yeah, absolutely.
Much nicer.
Yeah, or VOI and just one
item chooser
selection.
Yes, or VOI for item chooser, and then the other one that I use all the time, particularly on the even the iPhone and the iPad, is you highlight something. You do Command C or Shift down arrow to highlight something or whatever else. So Command C to copy, and then Command X to cut or Command V to paste. Nice and straightforward.
Yeah, the iPad is definitely iOS and Mac combined, isn't it? And the iOS kind of lives on its own, but it does have some of that. I know it's an interesting one. And that's, I think, what confuses people, because when you start asking questions on forums about commands and what works and what doesn't, you'll often get, just do this, just do that. But that might only work on an iPad. And it's the challenge. Mm. But anyway, listen, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us about CodeJumper. I really appreciate it, David.
Yeah.
If people want to know more about you and your podcasts and your shows, obviously not quite as good as ours, but we'll move away from that. How do people do that? How do people find out more?
Okay, well, they can follow me on Twitter at D Woodbridge, which is the main place. And then my free podcast, which is, where am I? Talking Tech at Vision Australia Radio. So that's just search for Talking Tech by Vision Australia. Then I've got IC, various technologies from a blind person's perspective. So you just search for IC by David Woodbridge, you'll find that one. And I also do the VA cast from Vision Australia retail store. So they're basically my three podcasts. But honestly, I tweet everything on at D Woodbridge. That's the best way to track me down.
Yeah. And, I am joking slightly. Your podcasts are brilliant. Yeah. Listen, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it, David. And all the best.
My pleasure.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
News from the internet.
Okay, time to check in with the news then. And there is one story that I want to talk with you about, Robin, and that is CSUN. CSUN, of course, big event happens every year. This year, though, as a result of coronavirus, that event being considerably scaled back.
Yeah, I mean, there's two colleagues from AbilityNet that were going to go. I toyed with the idea very, very briefly, but they're not actually going now because of the shortening of the number of organizations that are going to be there, and they were going to visit other partners that we've got over there, but they're being hot and cold about how much exposure they should have to international travel, etc.
I mean, they are following the obvious rules. They're saying no handshakes, no touching of anything, which, of course, in an exhibition hall, if there is one, that could be rather difficult because you know, as blind people do need to touch things, so that could be a problem.
All the demo equipment and stuff.
Yeah, how are they going to deal with that? I don't know.
But wipe it down in between every single person that has
possibly.
A feel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is that what they are doing, which is interesting, is they are continuing nonetheless. A number of the companies have pulled out, though. I think, what was it, Google, Adobe, and a lot of the big players actually have pulled out of this year. So that's sad. But our own Robin Spinks has gone along. He sent us this little audio postcard as a teaser for next week's show.
So it's involved two flights, a 19-hour journey, but we've made it. I've arrived at the 35th CSUN Assistive Technology Conference here in Anaheim, and it's just after 9 o'clock in the morning, and there's a growing buzz in the vestibule as people begin to assemble and register. I'm at the registration desk right now. We've got some pre-conference meetings and workshops happening over the next day or so, and in the sessions proper commencing on Wednesday morning first thing. So looking forward to it, and we'll bring you more news of the conference and events as things progress.
So Robin there managed to make it, which is the good news. What he'll get out of it, well, who knows? We're going to find out over the next few days. Of course, the event is kind of underway now as we speak, as we are on air. But, you know, next week we will talk a lot more about it. I don't think there's going to be a lot of big news coming out of this one this year, sadly, Robin.
No, no. But I mean, one Robin's gone, so that's good. Yeah, we're covered.
That's right. We are covered, absolutely. And lots of other guys are there as well and girls. So we're going to check in with as many people as we can. And Robin's going to try and get some interviews with people for us as well here on Tech Talk. So that's great. Check out our show next week for more on that. Now, let's talk about Whirlpool, Robin. Are you a fan of washing machines?
Yeah. Well, I don't actually have much to do with ours.
Oh,
I must confess.
Come on.
But it's not a Whirlpool. We're at, or a, is it Hotpoint as well
Hot
that are covered? But
Indesit.
Yeah. And Indesit, yeah. So thankfully, it's not one of those.
Well, yeah, that's right. I was going to say, are you a fan of washing machines? And my second question was going to be, are you a fan of them going on fire? because if you are, you're going to love this next story. So this is a story from Whirlpool, the company behind the brands such as Hotpoint and Indesit. A very small number of their models are at risk of going on fire, which of course is very concerning. And Whirlpool are very quick to be on the case with this and say, right, look, we've got to get your serial number from your product to make sure that your product is not affected, or indeed is affected. Now, if it is affected, they will come, they will disconnect the appliance, they will take it away, and they will bring you a brand new machine. Either exactly the same machine or very similar. So let's hear now from Ian Moverley from Whirlpool, who's been explaining to us about this. And I did ask him specifically, Robin, the question about the challenge that blind and partially sighted people will have in trying to locate that serial number on their washing machine.
It is absolutely a challenge, and that's really why I wanted to come and talk to you directly about this one. But we do need that number because of the very specific manufacturing dates that will define whether or not the machine is safe to use or not. So if it's not possible to be able to identify it, then if I can encourage maybe to ask for a family member or a friend or a neighbor to help with that information. Very typically, if you open the door of the machine where you would put the clothes in, there will be a sticker there. There'll only be usually two pieces of information, which is a model number and a serial number. But if your listeners call us as well, our agents are trained to be able to guide you as to where that information is. You know, of course, if it's completely impossible to be able to decipher that, then do let us know, and I'm sure that our team here in Peterborough will be able to sort that out. I would recommend the best course of action is to give our call centre a call, which is here in the UK, and the telephone number for that is 0800 316 1442, and it's open 7 days a week.
So there you go. That is the way to get in touch with them. 0800 316 1442. That is the number to call if you have a concern about your washing machine. If it is a Hotpoint or an Indesit, like they say, though, they do need that serial number, Robin. But there are apps out there if you've got a smartphone, and I'm thinking Be My Eyes for this one.
Yeah, or if you can feel the sticker, you could snap it and, Be My Eyes, because then they can tell you what it is over the video call and you can jot it down somehow. Yeah.
Or, and I did actually talk to Ian about this as well. Can you just send in, you know, like a picture to an email address? Would that work? You know, that would work. That'd be really good. And I even suggested that perhaps they want to get Whirlpool onto Be My Eyes as well, so that, you know, they could offer support directly to customers. And that is something I think that they were rather interested to learn about. So you never know, maybe one day soon. We're bringing the community to the mainstream. That's what it's all about. But yeah, this is an important one. So do make sure if you've got a hot point or Indesit, as Ian says, get that serial number either with someone's help, family member or neighbour, or use something like Be My Eyes for this one, because you've got to make sure that device is okay. Now, if it, and the thing is, a very small number of these devices are affected, these washing machines. So it is important to say yours might not be affected. So, you know, don't think you're going to just get a free washing machine out of it. Right, if it's, oh, well, you know, mine's a bit tatty and, you know, oh, I hope it's affected. It might not be, in which case they will not replace it. And that's absolutely right. So, get in touch with them on that number, 0800 316 1442. Can we talk about Android devices? I always get in trouble when I bring up Android devices, Robin, because usually it's a negative thing I start talking about. And in this particular occasion, this is a story about apparently over a billion devices out there that are running the risk of, some serious risks of security issues with things like malware, the chances of getting viruses on them, because they're out of date, essentially. Those running, I think, Android 4, which, believe it or not, people will still be running out there. Android 4 and older. And actually, you know, I'm thinking here not just about phones, but I'm also thinking about some Braille devices as well that do run Android, and it's some older versions of Android, actually. There are risks with having these older devices, and this is something which, obviously, we're very keen to tell people about and make sure you get the very latest software. I mean, you're not an Android guy. I'm not an Android guy. So, you know, and we're kind of forced into the latest Apple software updates, which I think is a better way of doing it. Whereas Android, it's more up to you, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, iOS can be updated on really quite old handsets. I think it was only the 5, the iPhone 5, that stopped being supported in sort of recent history. Google only support Android devices for 3 years. So they can very quickly get out of date. If you're still, you know, if you've got a device that's over 3 years old, chances are you haven't got the latest version. You may not be aware, you know, what the latest version is and whether you've got it or not, but that's kind of a rule of thumb. But yeah, it's a very high percentage of devices out in the world that haven't got the latest patches because they're more than 3 years old in their operating system.
Well, those comments you make are definitely echoed by Kate Bevan, who is a consumer rights awareness expert and certainly a tech expert as well at the consumer group Which.
Google, which controls Android, only supports Android for a maximum of 3 years. So that means you get 2 years of what are called platform updates, i.e. you get the next two versions of Android after the one that's on your phone when you buy it, and then a further year of security updates. And after that, there are no more updates.
So this means that people are vulnerable to what?
Vulnerable to malware, particularly. Vulnerable to their phones being taken over by malware. Vulnerable to hackers. Vulnerable to malware stealing information off their phone.
And so what can you do about it?
Well, first of all, you can put mobile antivirus on your phone. Look in the Google Play Store for the well-known names like Sophos, like McAfee, like Norton, like Avast, like AVG, and download and put one of those on your phone. Be aware, though, if your phone is really quite old, i.e. if it's still running Android 4 or something, you might not be able to find an antivirus app because they don't work on older phones. You can also have to be very careful about what you're clicking on. We're all familiar with phishing emails, but also there are phishing attempts come by text. Those are called smishing attempts. And as well as just trying to get you to sign into things and give away your user details, they can also carry a payload of malware. So be very careful about that. And also, do your backups. Make sure you've got all your stuff backed up so that if the worst comes to the worst, at least you have all your stuff. I mean, ideally, you have it backed up in the cloud, and preferably if you've got photographs and precious documents on your phone, also on something like a hard drive at home too.
Good advice there from Kate Bevan from Which, talking there to Tim Jones. So, yeah, good advice there, Robin. Always make sure you're backed up. And, you know, if you can get a new device, it is probably important to do that. But, of course, these devices do cost money. Not everyone can afford to just make the leap into a new phone every 3 years, which is obviously the case here. Anyway, you can tell us your thoughts on all of this. Tech Talk at rnib.org.uk. If you're using Android, what are you using? Where are you with it? You still running Android 4? Wow. Well, someone who is an Android lover, we don't judge him on it, is our very own Andy, the Eyes, as I like to call him.
Oh,
he's with us here. Hello, Andy.
Good day to you both. Good day. Hello.
I would have brought you in earlier today, but unfortunately we had David Woodbridge here. We've got the news.
You've
just been sitting there having a great time, doing nothing as always. I mean, doing nothing at the moment.
Doing all the work, yes.
Yeah, that's right. You tell yourself that. Right, let's get into the Ask Tech Talk for this week. And it's an interesting one this week.
Yeah, this one comes from Mohammed. He says, "Hi, firstly, I would like to say how much I enjoy the show, and some of the demonstrations recently have been excellent, especially how to use Outlook. The question I have is in respect of solid-state drives and the fact that they don't make a noise during boot up. I'm just wondering if there is any way for the totally blind person to know the computer is booting up. The hard drive used to make a whirring noise. Any idea would be gratefully received. Thank you, from Mohammed." Well, this week it's the turn of Madeline Mann from RNIB's Technology for Life team to answer this one. So, Madeline, over to you.
So if you start the computer up and you're wearing headphones, turn the volume up to quite loud and you might hear some tiny beeping noises that tells you that your SSD drive is actually starting up. But please be aware, put the volume up to very high, otherwise you have difficulties hearing that. If you don't hear any tones on your headphones, that might depend on your sound card not being an onboard sound card, so you might have difficulties hearing those. And what you could do then is use something like Seeing AI or Voice Dream Scanner and scan your screen, because that should tell you where your computer currently is with starting up. SSD drives are extremely quick and they should not take long to start up, so just be a bit patient and you should get there quite easily. If you have any other questions or need some Tech for Life support, please ring us via the helpline on 0303 123 9999 or send us an email to tfl@rnib.org.uk.
Thanks, Madeline. Yeah, great question from Mohammed there. Thank you so much for sending that in. And like we've said before, get in touch with the Technology for Life team. They are always there to support. But if you want to get in touch with us, Andy, what can people do?
Yeah, the email address is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You can even tweet us at RNIB Radio and use the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Okay, let's move on to kind of almost another ask question, but we've been asked this so many times on the show that I thought we'd feature it more prominently this week and give it a chance to really kind of explore the answer. This email comes from who, Andy?
Yeah, this one's from Norma.
Okay.
She says, "Dear Tech Talkers, many thanks for a great show. I think I remember someone saying that you were going to do a demonstration on the Logitech keys to go with an iPhone. Did I miss this? I would find it really helpful for you guys to discuss the ways to use a keyboard with my iPhone 7. Since my Windows 7 laptop is no longer supported, I'm thinking about transferring everything I do to my phone. I'm not very good at selecting, cutting and pasting, etc., and using gestures. I hope it would be easier to use things like numbers and pages if I have a keyboard. Do you have any views on this? Listening to last week's episode, I think Robin referred in passing to being able to do something different than using the rotor on my iPhone. Could we talk about this more? Is it about making use of shortcuts? Because I'm a voiceover user. Following on from an email you read out a couple of weeks ago, I too am a relative newcomer to the podcast. I have been blitzing the last few episodes to find out all of the nuggets of wonderful information you provide. However, I would think it would be excellent if there was some way of tracking back through the previous episodes for the items, for example, that connect with using an iPhone, JAWS, etc., rather than having to listen through all of the previous episode. If this was on the RNIB website, would this be doable? Many thanks for all the fun and useful information. That's from Norma.
Okay, well, we will do our best with that one, Norma, for sure. We will try and see if that's something that is possible. Another option we're looking at is chapterising the podcasts as well, so people can easily navigate around them. Maybe that is a way to do it. I don't know. But anyway, let's get back to the main thrust of your question, Norma, and that is about using keyboards. Robin, you and I love using our physical keyboards. I decided this week to do what I've been promising to do for weeks now, possibly months, and that is find out how to, or not find out, but share with you how I use my keyboard with my iPhone.
Okay, so here I am in the Tech Talk Lab once again for you. And this time around, we're going to talk about using your iPhone with a keyboard. Now, I am going to use a Bluetooth keyboard. And the one I've got is the Logitech K380. Now, the reason I chose this one is because it's small. It's the size of an Apple Magic keyboard. So you won't get the number pad with this one, but you do have a full QWERTY keyboard, good size as well, and it can connect to multiple devices, three in fact. You can have your smartphone, you could have it connected also to a laptop, and that could be a PC or Mac, or indeed your desktop as well, or even a tablet, an Apple TV, even Android or Chrome as well. If you've got a Chromebook, you could connect it to that. So lots of opportunity to use it. It's not a bad price either. Kind of ranges between £25 and £35, depending on when you get it and where. So I do like this one for a whole range of reasons. And I'm going to talk you through how I use it, because this is possibly one of the most common questions I ever get on Tech Talk. And that's why I thought I'd spend some time on it here. Here I am with the phone connected. It's the iPhone 11 Pro. It's connected to the Logitech K380 by Bluetooth. Pairing process is nice and simple. Another feature I like about this particular keyboard is that when you connect it via Bluetooth, you don't have to enter a code. Some of the keyboards require you to enter a code on the keyboard and then press the Enter key. And that, of course, means that you've got to maybe try and remember a six-digit number and try and type it in really quickly. You only get a short amount of time. You don't get this with this keyboard. So that's another plus point for it. Now, what I'm going to show you is how I navigate using QuickNav, all right? So QuickNav is here. You might hear that little noise. That's it on, and that's it off. So I'll turn it back on again. And to do that, all I'm doing is holding down the left and right cursor keys at the same time. So I just press them both together once. That's it off. That's it on. It's as simple as that. That's how you turn QuickNav on and off. And truthfully, that's the best feature you're going to learn about this keyboard and indeed how to navigate. And that's not just with this keyboard, that's with any keyboard that you use that is Bluetooth. It's the same key commands you'll use, whatever keyboard you have, whether it be the Microsoft Universal Foldable or even the Apple Magic keyboard. All of this applies. So first things first, I want to get to the top of the screen. First command I'll teach you about is Control Up Arrow.
App Store.
And that takes me right to the top left of the screen, the far left as it'll go before the status bar. The first app I've hit is the App Store. I'm now going to arrow right. Because I'm in quick nav mode, it means I can just move around the screen. I don't have to hold in the VO keys like I would on a Mac or in some cases on the iPad as well. I'm just going to arrow right.
Home. iTunes Store. Photos. Calendar. Monday the 9th of March. Notes. Wallet. Activity. Camera.
So that's me just navigating round the screen. Let's go into my social folder.
Social folder. 10 apps. 8 new items.
Okay, so I've got a folder here. I want to go in. Now, normally, of course, you would double tap on the screen if you're using VoiceOver, or you would single tap if you're not. To do the single or double tap motion either way on a keyboard is really simple, actually. You just hold down the up and the down arrow together once, and that performs the double tap motion or single tap.
Social. Heading.
So that's me now in the folder, the social folder. The heading there, of course, is social. Let's see what apps are in there. I'm going to arrow right.
Facebook. One new messenger. WhatsApp. Twitter.
Okay, let's go into Twitter then. So I will, again, double tap on the screen as I would, as I'm using VoiceOver. I'm going to do the same action with the up and down arrow together.
Twitter. Account menu. Stephen Scott. Button.
And that's me in Twitter. Simple as that. To navigate around, I just use my right arrow.
Notifications. Heading. Notification settings. Button.
Okay, so I'm in the notifications area. I really want to be in the main feed itself. So what I'm going to do is, earlier I told you about control up arrow to take you to the top left of the screen. Well, simply, control down arrow takes you to the very bottom right of the screen. It takes us to the last thing that you can see on the screen.
Messages tab.
Okay, so there's messages tab. Nothing in there as usual. Nobody loves me. I'll arrow left.
Selected. Notifications tab.
And you might think, well, hang on, were you at the right-hand side of the screen? How do you know? Okay, well, let's check that. Let's go right once.
Messages tab.
Okay, so we'll do that again.
Messages tab.
Okay, I'm getting the donk, and the donk means I've gone too far, or as far as I can go. So left will take me back. So left cursor key.
Selected. Notifications tab.
That's where I am. Left again.
Search and explore tab.
If I want to search for something, and left again.
Home tab. New items.
To the home tab, which of course there are new items. I can double tap that with the up and down arrow together. Nothing much happens. I'll do it again.
Selected. Home tab. New items. Selected. Home tab.
And the reason I do that is because sometimes it just selects the tab, but to actually get the feed to refresh all the way back to the top again, I've got to double tap it again, essentially. You've probably noticed that if you use the Twitter app. So control plus to get to the top.
Account menu. A Ditch Talker Steve. Button.
And go to the right.
See top or latest tweets. Button. Coronavirus. WHO.
And actually, that's interesting. There was a see top or latest tweets button there, so I can very quickly refresh and get back to the top. But let's continue onwards. There was a tweet there about coronavirus.
Show more. Button.
Show more on that.
Ellie while work light. Maybe. Diane. I'm confused. Is Elizabeth Warren a washed-up Republican snake who couldn't even win her own state, or is she a progressive heavyweight?
Oh, that's all politics. Oh, we're not getting into that here on TikTok. Goodness me. But there you go. So that is me in there. And let's say I wanted to like that tweet. Well, I can use the up and down arrow, which is essentially the same as I would perform an up and down swipe on the screen.
Reply.
That's the down arrow once.
Retweet.
Retweet again.
Like.
Like.
Share via.
Okay, so I can share it as well. So what you're noticing is that I'm just using four keys on the keyboard and I'm navigating absolutely fine without the need for anything else. Now, of course, all the apps generally work the same, right? You swipe right or you swipe left. So the actions are taken over by the keys. So to swipe right, you press the right cursor. To swipe left, you press the left cursor key. To go up and down, to swipe up and down to get different options on a particular action, then you can use the up and down arrow keys. So really, really simple way to navigate. Now, to get back to home, which of course we will all want to do at some point, and you want to get back to the main screen, you hold down the VO keys, which of course are control and option. Press the letter H.
Twitter.
So I'm back on the Twitter app, and if I press it again because I know I'm inside a folder.
Social folder. 10 apps. 8 new items.
So I've pressed Control Option H or VOH, and that is your home area. And that's it, really. That is as simple as it gets. Now, I know what you're thinking. Really? Is that it, Stephen? That's the easy way to navigate around? Well, do you know what? I think it is. Now, let's talk about actually texting or sending messages, or let's think about actual text entry here as well, because of course that's the whole purpose of using the keyboard, right? Let's send a message to Robin Christofferson. Now, there are a couple of ways to do this. I could ask Siri to do this for me, and that's an easy way to do it. I can just ask her and then tell her the message, and that's great. Or alternatively, let's actually write the message. So let's find messages. Now, two things here. On the screen I'm on, I know that my messages app is open. So what I can do is I can do VOF.
Enter search text.
And I can type in messages, or at least the first couple of letters of it. Enter.
Doc. Messages.
Bang. I'm on the messages icon. So, VO space to enter, or double tap.
Messages. Message. Text field. Is editing.
On message.
Insertion point at start.
So it's dropped me right into a message field. That means I've probably been having a conversation with someone. Okay, so let me now go and find Robin's details, and we'll send him a message. Okay, so control up arrow. Oh, nothing's happening. Why is that, I wonder? Well, that's because QuickNav has turned itself off. Yeah, because when it drops into a message field, rather helpfully, it turns QuickNav off. It doesn't do that in a Mac. So, we're going to turn it back on again. Remember, left and right arrow keys together once. Get that noise. And control up arrow.
Back button.
And there you go, we're on the back button. So just remember, when you're dropped into a text field on one of the apps, it will turn QuickNav off. Now, you might miss the sound. Those with a keen ear may have heard it already when we dropped into that message field. But if you didn't, well, don't worry. I do this all the time. I'm always sitting struggling to get around. Where am I? Well, that's because QuickNav has turned itself off. Right, let's go back and find Robin's text details. I want to message him. So again, double tap with the up and down arrow.
Back button. Messages. Heading.
And let's go to Robin. So arrow. More.
Button. Compose.
Arrow.
Search. Sir Robin Christopherson.
There he is. I'll double tap into there. And we'll arrow to the very bottom. Of course, we don't have to do right. We can just go control down.
Record audio. Button.
And there's the record audio button. Never found a command that allows me to use the double tap hold function that you would need to be able to perform in order to hold that button down to record audio. But if you know of a way, I'd love to hear about it. I've tried it in WhatsApp, doesn't work. Tried it in messages, can't get it to work. But if you know, I want to know, because it's a command I just cannot figure out. So I'm going to left arrow.
Message. On message. Text field.
Now, interestingly, this time around, let's see if QuickNav's turned itself on or off. So I'll arrow left.
Apps. Hidden. Button.
No, it hasn't. So it hasn't turned itself off this time. Why is that? Okay, let me right arrow again.
Message. On message. Text field.
It's not saying it's editing, okay? So it's just landing me on the text field, but it's not putting me into the text field. To do that, you have to do the double tap.
Message. Text field. Is editing.
And did you hear it? That little noise, that little bloop, that's telling us that we have come out of QuickNav mode, which means I can now type freely. Hello.
Hello. Robin. This is a test of me. Being amazing on Tech Talk once again.
Okay, so shall we send that to Robin? I think so. He'll not be expecting this. So I'm now going to again try and right arrow. No, I can't. But if I do left arrow, just interestingly,
full stop, N, I.
I can navigate around the text. Interesting to know that. So if you want to go back and change something, you can do that. Almost like you're in a Word document, but instead of being in a text message. Okay, let's turn on QuickNav again. Left and right arrow together. Right arrow once.
Send.
And there's the send button and the double tap.
Send.
The up and down arrow. And
record audio button.
He has got the message. Let's go back and check he got it, okay?
Message. Apps. Hit camera. Vertical scroll bar. I delivered.
It's delivered. And we'll see if he responds. that's an interesting question. Will he respond? Well, hopefully not, because he should be listening to this demo. Anyway, there you go. That is the simple way to enter text. And of course, on the web, things get even more interesting.
Well, I am so honoured. I have just received a really nicely typed text from Stephen. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome, Robin. Yeah, it does make such a difference. We are going to be talking more about this next week. We're going to be talking in particular about how to navigate the web using your iPhone and a QWERTY keyboard as well, my Bluetooth keyboard, that is. Plus, you're going to be demoing LinkedIn, the social network for us. Looking forward to that. And we'll get more of your emails as well with Andy. Looking forward to that, Andy.
Yes, see you both next week.
Lots and lots of emails, in particular around the RNIB Reading Services website. Lots of conversation on that one. That continues on next week's Tech Talk. See you next time. Bye, Robin.
Bye.